Welcome to This Is Only a Test, episode 14, recorded June 3rd, 2010. I'm Will Smith. Today I'm drinking a highball, delicious orange energy beverage.
Delicious meaning it has no flavor.
You haven't been introduced yet. Shut the hell up. I just pulled a Ryan Davis trick. With me today is my dear friend Norman Chan. Norm, how are you doing?
Your drink has no flavor.
It has orange and taurine flavor.
Taurine isn't a flavor.
That's good energy. What's going on this week? What have you been testing this week, Norm? I know you just walked back from shooting a review. What did you review?
I reviewed the ASUS G73JH-A1 laptop.
Okay. Did you like it?
We actually didn't talk about it last week because we filmed our first look only last week.
So what's tell us about this laptop. It's the one that's bigger than your head, correct?
It's bigger than three of my heads, much bigger than my head.
So what's the story on this? It's a big gaming laptop, desktop replacement.
It is a desktop netbook replacement. I think at a point where you have 17-inch laptops, they pretty much have to be desktop replacements. You could argue that the Apple MacBook Pro 17-inch is not a desktop replacement, that is meant for, you know, mobile productivity. But I don't think anyone would have a desktop or have a 17-inch laptop and a desktop. It's a replacement.
So it's primarily for people who've moved beyond the desktop. Speaking of desktop PCs, this week, well, we'll talk about that in a little bit. Let's save the D8 talk for later. But sure. So you like the big ASUS laptop?
I like it a lot. Little shocked at the price. The price is $1,700, and it gets me wondering, how do they get this to $1,700?
That is crazy cheap for this kind of laptop.
What type of compromise do you have to make? Because if you look at Apple's 17-inch notebook, it's the MacBook Pro 17-inch starts at $2,300. Even if you account like the 10% Apple tax, it's like it's more expensive, right? It only has a Core i5. There's only one hard drive and really crappy graphics, NVIDIA GT 330M. But that's Apple, so we'll put it aside because you're paying the tax. If you look at another gaming laptop like the Alienware M15X that I reviewed, or even other ones we haven't reviewed, those gaming laptops, $30,000, easy, easily.
$30,000.
$3,000.
Oh, $3,200. That's a lot of money.
And so you have to wonder what did ASUS, you know, what did they take away? And if you look at the specs, it doesn't look away. Doesn't look like they took away much, right?
Well, they took away stuff that doesn't matter as much, like battery.
That's the thing, but we'll get to that. So the specs, there was a Core i7, 720QM, which is starts at 1.6 gigahertz, goes up to 2.8 gigahertz on turbo mode.
So 1.6 is the battery saving speed.
Yes,
and it's actually quad core, right?
Quad core.
That's
correct.
Good.
And then with hyper threading, goes up to 2.8, which is that's fine. I mean, Photoshop ran great. Handbrake.
It's basically like a decent desktop PC.
Yes.
Just in a giant 8-pound
like what you would get if you built a $1,500 desktop PC.
No. It's like what you'd get for an $800 desktop PC.
Maybe a thousand.
A $1,000 PC with a bad video card. That's what you're looking at.
But this one doesn't have a bad video card.
This one has an okay video card.
Compared
to other
side,
laptops, it's
an
great.
Awesome video card. Yeah. The Alienware one I reviewed, which was $3,000, had a worse video card and performed worse in games. So while this laptop, you know, almost $1,400, $1,500 less than the Alienware, did better in games. But you're right, the compromise is battery life and size. So it's quiet, but it's big. It's fast, but you can't play on it on the battery for more than half an hour.
Well, that sucks. I mean, however, you're looking at a 13. So this is kind of like the successor to the $1,100 gateway of your. I think it was 1101 or something like that. It was basically $1,000 gaming laptop that had no battery life, but was an awesome PC aside from that, it was a LAN party machine. It was something you leave on your desk, something you don't do a whole lot to other than, you know, leave at home. And you don't carry it in a bag with you. This thing comes with a special bag.
It comes with a backpack.
For a normal laptop bag.
You can't put it in a bag. Like the backpacks I had, none of them could fit it. I had to use ASUS's bag that comes with it.
Well, so that's the new ASUS 17-inch. What's the model number?
G73JH, and we'll have the review up probably next week.
Yeah, next week sometime. Let's see. I've not been doing much PC stuff this week. I did a coffee video actually a long time ago, but we posted it yesterday or the day before. Which
coffee method was better?
You know, it's different. It's different styles of coffee, right? So the Chemex, which is what the video we posted this week, is a very mild, kind of inoffensive, but you know, still very coffee flavored coffee. It extracts a lot of.
I don't like offensive coffee.
Well, you don't like offensive anything. So
was it the best cup of coffee you've ever had?
The Chemex makes a great cup of coffee. The best cup of coffee I've ever had. I don't think I've had that cup of coffee yet.
Okay.
Yeah,
difficult to say. High standards.
I have a high bar. So the Chemex is basically kind of a conical drip thing. You pour water in the top on the grounds. The advantage you have over that over like a drip brewer is that where the drip brewer sprays onto a one particular part of the grounds, so one part gets really over-extracted and the rest kind of nothing happens. With the Chemex, you pour the water into it manually and you can control how long the grounds sit, all sorts of different stuff. It gives you a lot of control. The result is a very nice, mild, very coffee cup of coffee.
So really the segment should be in search of the best cup of coffee.
Maybe that is the name of the segment.
Will's ever had.
Well, the AeroPress is high on the list, right? I mean, the AeroPress makes a truly stunning cup of coffee, but it is a pretty significant pain in the ass compared to, say, you know, your automatic drip machine or even the Chemex or you know, one of the other, like a vacuum pot or something like that. So, you know, it's... There's always a better cup of coffee out there, right? You just have to go find it. And the trick, once you get that better cup of coffee, is to figure out how to replicate it over and over again because, you know, changing the grind a little bit or letting it steep too long or even stirring it twice instead of stirring it once can make a difference in how it tastes.
It's a losing battle.
Well, that's one way to look at it.
It's uphill right now, but once you have that perfect cup, it's downhill.
Well, that's true. I mean, once you get the best cup of coffee you've ever had, you're just going to be disappointed for the rest of your life.
That's right. Unless you get a robot to do it.
I will tell you, I went to Sunflower up in Sonoma a few weekends ago, and that place makes a truly glorious cup of coffee. It's just a press pot, really good. It's probably the most expensive cup of coffee I've ever bought, but I mean, it was totally worth it, and it was really, really glorious. So that's what I've been doing. We've also been testing Kins. How are you feeling about the Kin?
Oh, it is slow.
You're testing the Kin too. I'm testing
the
Puck.
Kin too. I've sent text messages. I've tried surfing the web, but then I kind of gave up on surfing the web because websites just don't look right.
It is not good for web surfing. It's purely for Facebook and Twitter, man.
It is great for Facebook. If I was someone who posts on Facebook pages a lot, then it is literally a tap and a swipe away from someone's Facebook wall, as opposed to on the iPhone where you have to open the Facebook app or you have to launch the web browser and then click the person's page. And now here, tap my favorite, swipe over their Facebook wall.
Yeah, I'm not that excited about the Kin.
I think it's perfect if you have a kid and you want them to give them a phone that they won't get laughed at in school because they need Facebook and Twitter. But you don't want them buying apps or visiting naughty websites. It's respectable.
Yeah, but if you have a kid old enough to use a phone like that, then you have to trust them to not visit.
Old enough at this day and age means five.
Do you really think that this is a tween phone, right? They're marketing it toward teenagers so that tweens
want
it.
8 years old.
You think this is a phone for a smartphone for 8-year-olds?
8-year-olds who love sexting.
Wow. Okay. And on that note, let's talk about the other thing I've been working on. I've been working on a secret project using Amazon's EC2 that I can't talk about more than to say I've been using Amazon's EC2. Which is really interesting because you can create images and do all sorts of crazy shit in the cloud. It's nutty.
It's as if you had your own server.
It's as if I had my own server. It's like I have a fucking server farm. It's a data center.
Smith's data center.
And I pay 9 cents per hour for CPU time.
That's pretty cheap.
That's pretty cheap, yeah. Computex is this week. What's going on in Computex? Tablets? Okay, let's go. Let's talk about tablets. What's going on in tablet world? iPad's been out for a while.
So now everyone has their own.
Copycats are coming.
Sure. ASUS announced three tablets if you want to get technical about it. There are two ePads. One's a 10-inch and one's a 12-inch. Interestingly, they run Windows 7, but not the Windows 7 you and I know. It's Windows 7 embedded.
So is this like a super gimpy version? Is this like a gimpier version of Starter?
Gimpier plus with tablet features.
So this is a version that is designed for light clients. Not thin clients, but lighter clients.
Yes.
Like tablets.
Not Starter Edition, which is the gimpy version of Windows 7. This is on a separate track.
And I assume they're not putting Windows Mobile. So that means now Microsoft, we'll talk about this in a minute too, but Microsoft has three OSs now then. Because that means they have Windows 7 and Server, Windows.
Mm-hmm.
Windows for PCs, essentially.
Sure.
And then they have Windows Mobile, which I would assume that these tablets should be running Windows 7 Mobile.
Windows 7 Phone.
But it's not out yet. Windows 7 Phone, yeah, sorry. So now we have Windows 7 Embedded Tablet Edition 2010, mm-hmm. whatever the fuck they're calling that. So this is the third variant of their OS.
Yes.
Seems like a lot of duplicated effort.
Seems like, from what I understand, it's kind of like very basic OS features. You know, you can install apps and stuff. But it has a tablet overlay, much like how Media Center, you know, Media Center PCs have the Media Center interface. This will have, like, the tablet interface with touch.
Interesting. Okay, so we don't know a whole ton about that yet. We had a good story up about it earlier this week, but what else is coming on Computex?
So ASUS, in addition to ePads, they also had a separate writing tablet. Oh, okay, so I'll get to the D8 stuff later because there was also a tablet that came out of that. MSI tablets at Computex. I think a bunch of Android devices. NVIDIA CEO Jensen talked about how he wants people to unite, you know, behind Android. Android is going to be their OS of choice for Tegra.
Really? That's an interesting. I mean, considering that their biggest partner so far has been Microsoft, it's interesting that they're embracing Android.
I think it makes sense. I think for what the Tegra can do, and since it's ARM, and you know,
well, since there's so many awesome games out for Android right now that really require 3D, then it seems
that's where they want to differentiate, right? All the NVIDIA demos that they've shown running on their Android tablets have all emphasized gaming. And, you know, they're saying build an Android tablet, but don't build it with Qualcomm, build it with NVIDIA, and you can actually have games.
And then you have a compelling multimedia experience.
Then they think they're the saving grace of the platform.
Interesting. Okay, so Intel also launched a new Atom processor at Computex?
Yes. It's Oak Trail.
Oh, another less. So we have had Pine Trail and Dove Trail.
Canoe Lake.
Lonesome Dove. Okay, so what's the story on the new processors?
I think dual core or it's.
Well, wasn't Pine Trail originally supposed to be dual core?
Pine Trail is dual core. I'm not exactly sure what the technical details of
the difference
of Oak Trail.
Okay. But this is a next year processor,
yes.
Late this year processor, not. You know, the other thing that's interesting.
And it's separate from Morristown. And you know, Morristown is what they want for like real mobile devices, phones and stuff. This is still for netbooks, and the hardware they demoed, super, super thin.
Interesting. One of the other things that I found really interesting is that Intel is actually going after Atom in everything. I mean, they're saying that Atom is going to be a CPU choice for phone, for embedded, for tablet, for everything from super, you know, lightweight set-top boxes on up to, you know, chintzy PCs, basically. You know, and while it's been clear that Intel's had that kind of aspiration before, I was really surprised that they actually came out and said, hey, we're going to put this in phones, because it's been a little too power hungry for phones up till this point. But I mean, I guess with ARM getting more power hungry and Atom getting less power hungry, at some point they'll meet in the middle and things are going to happen. Anything else out of Computex that I missed?
What else is noticeable? Notable.
I mean, it seemed like it was nothing but tablet stories. Tablet.
Nothing but tablet. I think there were a bunch of hard drive announcements. I think someone caught a glimpse of a dual Fermi 480 card, graphics card.
Okay.
But I don't think that's something that's going to hit consumers for a long time. And definitely not in its current incarnation.
Well, I mean, a dual Fermi card is going to basically you have to build a PC around it. I mean, it's a lot of
you're talking about
400 watts of power of heat or something to dissipate.
400 for both, for each. I think it was like 450 watt just for one Fermi. This is a 480. I think this card was actually two 470s.
And yeah, it's a basically you're looking at four PCI Express external power connectors, plus a slot, plus the power from the slot.
Well, actually, the one I saw, I think, was actually just 2 8-pins.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get that.
But
interesting.
You can still pull a lot of power. The thing is, I'm not sure how practical that is.
It's going to be hard to build a machine. I mean, it's hard enough to build a machine with the dual GPU. I don't know if anybody's ever. I mean, you've built dual GPU single slot dual GPU machines before.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean,
they are long cards, and
you have to have a BV power supply.
You need a BV. I mean, and there's no point in really getting it. I mean, to SLI, you can't get two of these cards. I don't know anyone with two 5970s. It really makes more sense to buy two of the cards.
Well, two really single cards.
Two single cards.
Yeah,
yes.
No doubt. Okay, so other big conference this week is D8, which is Walt Mossberg's All Things Digital conference.
Big speakers. So the big three, you had Steve Jobs speak, I think yesterday, two nights ago.
I think Tuesday, maybe. I can't remember.
Yes, two nights ago. Then yesterday, Mark Zuckerberg.
Yes. Did a Wednesday keynote. Was Mark. And this morning was Ballmer.
And Ballmer. So yes. CEOs of arguably, you know, three of the biggest four internet companies or software companies in the world, minus Google. Google wasn't there.
There was a lot of heavy hitters talking.
Yes.
So let's start at the beginning.
Okay.
Steve Jobs came out, basically said that the PC, he made what I thought was a pretty good analogy. He said,
so this is the big takeaway.
This was what I took away. I mean, you can tell me what you took away, but the thing I took away was, Jobs said that he's looking at the PC like the truck in pre-urban America. So when we were an agrarian society, everybody had pickup trucks because they used them on the farm.
Every PC user a farmer.
He said they were Luke Skywalker.
Okay.
Yeah, so everybody has a pickup truck. When you move to the city, you don't need a pickup truck anymore. People start buying cars.
He lives in the city. Cupertino is the only city in the world.
Yes. Yes, that is true. So what he's saying is that the PC is the multi-purpose heavy lifting computing platform. While the desktop, while new things like smartphones and tablets and, you know, magical devices are the cars of the future.
True.
I actually think it's a pretty good analogy.
I think it's a fair analogy, but just like not everyone just drives one car.
Well,
I could have a sports coupe. iPad is a sports coupe, you know, pure thrill.
I think
and
the iPad's
limited.
A Prius, dude.
No. iPad's not a Prius. Netbook is a Prius.
That's true.
Or Civic. ULCV is a CULV is laptops or Priuses. I think iPad's a sports coupe. I think
maybe it's a poser sports coupe, like a Boxster or something like that. Like
maybe. And I think something like the Courier, what the Courier would have been, would be like a station wagon.
I mean, I think we're taking the analogy too far at this point. But I do think that, I mean, the analogy of the PC for people who need heavy lifting and the everybody else having something that's kind of intermediate and probably a little bit of a thinner device is apt.
Maybe I don't get it. The heavy lifting, I guess the trucks do heavy lifting and sedans don't because people want to be more mobile.
Well, let me put it this way. You're not going to go to Home Depot and load the back of your Lexus up with wood and stones, are
so,
you?
But those are builders. Right.
Right. I mean, so he's saying you're not a builder.
So he's saying that it's less a statement of technology than of what people do. There are fewer builders in the world, fewer people who, fewer, you know.
Fewer content, fewer creators, more consumers.
And more consumers.
Right.
That's sad. That.
Well, I mean, but that's, you know, that seems to be the way it is. Or the things that people are creating don't require, you know, a heavy lifting computer. It's things like, you know, written word and photo, basic photo editing and stuff like that. Anyway. Other things he talked about, let's see, what else? It was pretty boring. He dodged a whole ton of questions. That was pretty exciting.
He did comment on the lost iPhone.
Yeah, he said he was, when Kara Swisher asked him what he was going to do with the next 10 years of his life, he basically said he was going after Gizmodo. That was interesting. I kind of think if he really wants to go after Gizmodo, he should just buy Gawker and then, you know, have them all killed. Ballmer said something really, really interesting about Apple, about Google actually splitting platforms. So, you know, he commented on Chrome OS versus Android. And it wasn't just Ballmer on stage. It was Ray Ozzie as well. Ray Ozzie is, I think, their chief technical architect or something like that. He's famous because he's the guy who invented Lotus Notes and Domino. But he's very well respected in the industry, super sharp guy, and kind of, I think, was brought on to fill the creative void left when Bill Gates retired. So Ray Ozzie was talking about Android being the kind of past, the catch-up option, the filling the gap option, and Chrome OS being the obvious future play for Google. So Ballmer then came after Google for having two OSs, which I find really humorous, since now Microsoft is looking at three OSs: desktop OS, tablet OS, mobile OS.
Well, they would argue that desktop and tablet OS are the same thing.
I think that that's probably why their tablets aren't going to be very good then. I mean, the one thing that the iPad has shown us is that there's a huge benefit to doing separate OS, you know, a lightweight OS for a tablet device, for a touch device that's designed to work with your finger rather than a keyboard or a pen or a stylus or whatever. So the other thing, let's talk about this. I mean, what do you think about that, actually, first?
Think about the multiple OS?
Do you think multiple OSs are a bad idea?
I think that they're a fine idea. Even Apple's two OSs, right? They have iPhone OS and they have Mac OS, and for their tablet, they went with the iPhone OS. I think it's smart of Microsoft not to do the dumbed-down Windows 7 phone OS for their tablet, because that's the Zune mistake.
Well, and their phone OS is 3 years behind Apple's phone OS.
Assuming the phone OS, even assuming, you know, it's probably, yes, a couple years, they went in a different direction. They don't want to do a head-on competition. They're not after the same customers. I think they know that, like with Zune, they can't go after the tablet market, because, you know, anyone who's interested in a content, in a lean-back tablet, content consumption tablet, they're going to buy Apple because that's the momentum is there. They're making their tablets, and I think Bill Gates kind of reiterated this, they are going to emphasize stylus, productivity, and...
So they're data entry devices, basically.
They are mobile productivity devices, which is something they've done before. It's basically revisiting tablet PC.
I mean, the thing that's interesting about this, because right now in the chat room on the live stream, there's a bunch of people talking about, not wanting a mobile OS on the tablet, which is great, but I don't think anybody wants to pay $2,000 for a tablet either. If you're looking at a good experience on a real OS on something that's the size of the iPad, you're going to have to pay a huge amount of money for that, or get a really super gimped experience, you know, netbook style. So, I mean, it's an interesting...
So you're saying that we're not ready for productivity tablets. The hardware isn't there.
In time, the hardware will get there at the right price point. Right now, the hardware is not there. I mean, clearly. I mean, Atom is not suitable for desktop OSs. I mean, we've been talking about that.
Atom's suitable for tablets either.
Atom might be suitable for tablets. We don't know. We've not seen Atom running a lightweight anything. I mean, if Arm can run tablet OS, then Atom should be able to, no problem. The thing Atom lacks is all the kind of specialized co-processors that have grown up around Arm over the last few years to do H.264 decode and all that. And right now on Atom, that's going to come in the form of Tegra and stuff like that.
I mean, Steve Ballmer kind of admitted that they fell a cycle behind, that their mobile devices are behind because, you know, they didn't react fast enough, they didn't innovate fast enough.
They lost a generation, basically, is what
they did. And they're right now, it does seem like they're playing catch up, and maybe it's that catch up is the wrong thing to do.
Yes. So the other big keynote of or discussion, I guess, these are interesting interviews, because it's basically Walt Mossberg and Kara Swisher on a stage, sitting in chairs with one or two executives. So it's not
Open up to Q&A.
Yeah.
You know, as softball as those questions are, the Q&A does ask some, you know, interesting questions.
Well, the Q&A is typically better than the Mossberg Swisher questions. I mean, not always, but a lot of the time. It seems like they don't Mossberg and Swisher don't necessarily push when given the opportunity. So the last thing is Zuckerberg.
Okay.
So Mark Zuckerberg, the CEO of Facebook, came to talk about privacy stuff and his kind of checkered past. And I mean, he was very sweaty.
Oh, that's, I think everyone's calling it his Nixon moment.
Right. He was the sweatiest executive I've ever seen. I mean, he was wearing a hoodie, in fairness.
Yes, under lights.
Right, under hot lights. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, he was... Well, first off, the hoodie had some kind of creepy Illuminati kind of style Facebook logos inside, which was weird, right? Did you see that?
Yeah, I definitely saw that.
It was weird.
It was all their directives and, you know, their philosophy, the company philosophy.
Right. So, I mean, the other thing that they were talking about, a lot of things that Zuckerberg did when he was very young. So when he was 19 years old, first starting out the company, and Ed made offhanded comments in IMs that have since circulated. And I mean, I think it's a little unfair to go after the guy for that, for stuff that he said when he was, you know, a college kid, 19 years old, and had a kind of
Well, it's what
the
people
startup.
In the blogs are talking about. It was the news of the moment. I think the interesting thing about the three interviews, Steve Jobs, you know, even though he didn't, it wasn't terribly insightful, it felt more like a conversation than any of the other interviews. Both the Ballmer interview.
Well, Ballmer doesn't interview well.
Right. The Ballmer one, and then Zuckerberg was terrible. It was just the company line, you know, what the PR guys told him that he needed to push.
Well, but the difference is they asked follow up questions to Zuckerberg, and they didn't ask follow up questions to Jobs or Ballmer.
There was definitely a confidence level in
Zuckerberg,
Musburg and Swisher.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could see the fear in Zuckerberg's eyes.
Which is so interesting since, you know, they're talking to a CEO of one of the biggest internet companies in existence.
Top five, right?
Top five, you know, one of the five most important internet companies. And they treat him like a kid.
He's just this dude.
Yeah.
Well, he wears a hoodie. I mean, in fairness. So, I mean, he's the same age as you, right, Norm?
I think he's
a little bit older.
A couple months older.
So how does this make you feel that, you know, Zuckerberg is
like
the
a
CEO.
Failure?
You failed in a big way.
Oh yeah, he set the bar high.
He set the bar. Yeah, I mean, youth everywhere. You're gonna have to be 14. You're gonna have to be fucking Doogie Howser to out entrepreneur Zuckerberg.
Turn down offers from Yahoo.
What I mean, so what's the feeling? Well, I mean, he's 26 years old. He's leading this huge company. I mean, they consistently make mistakes, but they keep growing. So and. I mean, the interesting thing is they have 500 million users and the site stays up, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's admittedly the problem with all these services in the past has been once they reach a certain size, they can't keep up on infrastructure.
Oh, no. Technically, I think they have really great people. But I think the company is so ambitious and so big that it's hard to adapt at the speed of of the internet.
Well, but
to accommodate all 500 million people.
So their current thing is a social graph, right? The current push for Facebook is to figure out the connections between all the people in the world, how I'm connected to you and how you're connected to Bill Clinton and how Bill Clinton is connected to somebody that's not Monica Lewinsky.
I think it's an abstraction that's one layer too complicated than what people understand. And the words they understand, privacy, that's all people understand. So maybe in practice, what they're doing makes sense from a business standpoint and from a innovation standpoint, but when you're talking to 500 million people, you can't tell them we're building a social graph and they're I get it, you know, that makes sense.
No, I mean they have to. I mean, part of the focus on the Q&A with Zuckerberg seemed to be on opt in versus opt out for Facebook and privacy changes, which sounds great when you don't have 500 million users. I know that when we've done opt in stuff in the past at MaxPC. Especially like the adoption rate of opt-in services was like 1% or 2%, even on a really highly engaged,
relatively small user base. Click check boxes.
Yeah. So, I mean, I understand why they do that stuff. I think that they handle it really poorly. And I think that what do you think about the Facebook privacy changes?
I frankly haven't noticed because I stopped using Facebook. Yeah. And I think a lot of people stopped using Facebook.
That's where I'm at.
I mean, it just became more than you needed. And Twitter, while it's really basic, what it showed a lot of people is that they didn't need everything that Facebook offered, and they didn't really care for.
Well, the news feed
expansion.
Is the killer app for Facebook, right?
It was, and you know what? And when news feed, and Zuckerberg actually made a good point when news feed came out. I remember everyone's like,
"Oh,
wow,
you were pissed off about it, yeah?
This is now stalker book, and how dare they show everyone's feeds, right?" And then they slowly curated it and allowed you to opt out and introduce more options, and now it's the only part of Facebook I think people care about.
Well, but then what happened was it became so popular that it quickly became valueless because it was so the content to spam ratio got so high that then they had to add all sorts of another layer of tools and complexity on top of that to manage that.
It's the newsfeed and what people want from newsfeed is counterintuitive to the idea of accumulating friends.
Because that's very true. Yeah.
When on Twitter, I only follow the people I want on my feed. On Facebook, everyone wants the friend because it's a numbers game. As South Park, you know, pointed out, everyone wants a million friends, you know, several hundred friends, but they don't want to read their feeds. They just want to be their friend so they can stalk them.
That's true.
You know, and people to click like on their farms.
Yes. And you know, hey, speaking of, can you harvest some pumpkin for me later this week? I'm going to be away from the computer.
Your farm's going to die.
No reason. Just asking. Okay, so last thing out of D8, was that crazy educational tablet reader thing? I can't remember the name of it. The No, yes.
K-N-O?
Yes, the K-N-O. K-N-O? I think I'm going to pronounce it K-N-O.
Let's call it the K-N-O. I think they pronounce it No, but it's more fun to say K-N-O.
So the K-N-O, what's the story on the K-N-O?
One of the big product announcements at D8. It's a, how do they describe it? It's educational tablet. It's meant for college students to use to replace
as opposed
textbooks.
To every other tablet that's out there, which is exclusively for porn.
Right. Right.
Yes.
Let's describe the hardware. Two 14-inch diagonal screens, two of them, folded like a book. It runs Linux. It runs. It uses NVIDIA Tegra processor, and they say it will cost under $1,000.
Interesting.
But it's also 5 pounds.
And only for education.
Well, 5 pounds.
Think
of it this
heavy.
Way, for a tablet.
That's like a laptop. It's like it a nice like laptop.
It is like a very nice laptop. And it's, I think, like over an inch thick.
It's a lot of tablet.
It is a big tablet.
I'm less excited now.
You know, the one thing it does make me realize is how little I want a big tablet and how fine I am with, you know, what the iPad gave us, which was a, you know, 9 to 10 inch tablet. When tablets were first announced and when we first saw the iPad keynote, the announcement, the first thing I thought was, well, it's one, that's a lot of bezel. That's what I thought. And two, 9.7 inches, that really isn't that much. That's,
you know,
the size of a netbook screen.
I want to say I think that there's not enough bezel on the iPad. I think we couldn't have been more wrong. Because when you hold it in portrait, there's your thumb overlaps the screen.
I think there's just enough bezel.
I have giant hands.
Look, my thumb covers just the bezel.
Okay.
But what I thought I wanted when the iPad was first announced was a tablet the size of my MacBook screen, a 15-inch tablet. I thought I wanted that. And what I realize now is that would be too unwieldy.
You're sure that's not part of the reality distortion field?
I
would like a higher resolution tablet. I kind of like the size.
I mean, that's
size is okay.
Pixel density.
Yes, pixel density.
As one of the stories
this was
posted
a good story.
This week,
yeah.
Posted, pixel density, more important than just size or just resolution.
That does it for D8. Let's talk about the big news. You know, this is on the front page of the San Francisco Chronicle this morning. AT&T announced pricing changes for data plans for smartphones yesterday. And I was, stunned that it was on the front page of the Chron, but also I kind of surprised people got up in arms about it. And I think it's kind of a good idea. I'm happy with this.
So what were the exact changes?
So the gist is, right now, when you sign up for an iPhone data plan, you pay $30 a month and you get unlimited data. And unlike Verizon and some other providers, it's not unlimited with air quotes data. It's actually unlimited. You can run as much as you want. It's $30 no matter what. They reserve the right to cut you off if you really abuse the shit out of it, but I've never read any reports of anybody being cut off for overuse of their data plan.
Yes,
on AT&T.
And unlimited makes sense with the iPhone OS because when you're downloading apps, you're streaming video. Streaming music.
But you're not downloading a ton of apps, and you can't download, you can't download stuff from iTunes that's bigger than, what, 50 megs or something now?
Yeah.
Podcasts are still limited to 10 megs. So, I mean, you're limited in what you can download over 3G. So, the first thing I did was fire up my browser, go to AT&T's billing site and see what my actual usage was. And I was shocked because, I mean, what did you think? What would you think my? Well, you read the article. But what would you think my usage was? Let's have a little podcast theater here.
1 gigabyte a month.
That's what I thought too.
Up and down.
I thought I used a lot of data. It turns out I use about 150, 200 megs at the outside.
That is nothing.
It is insignificant. So then I went to the internets and asked folks on Twitter to tell me what they use. and got almost 100 responses. Of those 100 people, I think 7 were using more than 2 gigabytes of data, which is higher than the 98%, you know, the 2% of people that AT&T said would be affected, but much lower than I expected given the kind of audience that follows me on Twitter.
And for those people, they can keep their $30 a month unlimited plan.
Yes. Yes. So
you can be grandfathered in, and you can still do that until, I think, I'm not sure when they start.
The
7th.
It's next. No, it's next Tuesday.
Okay.
So the new plans are very straightforward. They're named badly with pros and maxes and all sorts of weird identifiers. But basically the gist is there's a 2 gigabyte, $25 a month plan, and there's a 200 megabyte.
250 meg or 200
meg? 200 meg.
Okay.
$15 a month plan.
Okay.
And if you have the high-end plan, the 2 gigabyte plan, you can add tethering for $20, which is a fool's game. We'll talk about that in a second.
So here's where people are pissed off.
Yes.
The plans as they are, I mean, if you just look at $25 a month for 2 gigs and $15 a month for 200 megs,
yes,
fine. That reasonable, better than what we have right now at
yes.
face value.
Yes.
But here's where three reasons that people have problems with the plan.
Okay.
One is on the 200 meg plan, if you want to add more,
if you do it in 200 meg increments, right?
You can only do 200 meg increments, and it costs the same amount, $15 more.
That's
so then you're
sauce.
Paying $30 for 400 megs or $45.
So you have to control yourself, basically.
You have to control yourself a lot. And that sucks because compared to the 2 gigabyte plan, it only costs an additional.
I think it's $5 or something.
$10
for another 10 gigabytes.
For another
right?
gigabyte.
Yeah.
Which is very reasonable. So that comparison sucks. Two, this also applies to iPad. And iPad had, you know, the appeal of iPad was that you could turn off your subscription on and off anytime, right?
And
you
could
also have unlimited at $30 a month. Now, if you want to keep it unlimited at $30 a month, you can't turn it off. Because even though you have no contract, you know, term in minimum, you still have to be on the continuous contract to be grandfathered in. You can't have the a la carte anymore. But the a la carte is 2 gigs a month and, you know, the same as the iPhone data plan.
Yes.
But I would imagine you use a lot more data on your iPad than you do on your iPhone.
Well, I mean, you're still limited in video streaming and stuff for the time being because it doesn't work. The thing is, the stuff that I use on my iPad with 3G is always... it's always kind of location-based stuff. It's maps, it's looking up, it's browsing, it's hitting Twitter. It's all super lightweight stuff. I mean, most of what I do on the phone on mobile, because 3G is slow, is very lightweight. It's Facebook, Twitter, email, a very light web browsing, RSS feed reading, stuff like that. Not kind of, you know, I'm not going to go to YouTube on 3G or Netflix or whatever, just because it's not a good experience. It's too slow.
I'm
a little more discerning
it.
About
sure.
that.
And then the third thing people are pissed off about, you're right, the tethering. So
well, the tethering is a
clusterfuck. They now have tethering option.
Yeah.
It's $20 additional a month
yes.
just to enable the tethering feature already.
Give you the – so hold on. You're saying it's $20 a month extra for them to flip a switch.
Flip a switch to say that you can now tether your iPhone.
Using data you've already paid for.
Using data. You don't get any extra data.
Yeah, that's not cool.
It's $20 a month to flip the switch.
Yeah, that seems like, let's see, what's the phrase? Highway robbery? Is that right?
It's clearly robbery. I think you can, I mean, I never expected tethering to be free. That would be not reasonable because by tethering, you were basically denying AT&T.
No, that's not the way it should work, though. If I'm paying $2 for data, $20 for gigabytes of data, I should be able to use those gigabytes of data for whatever I want.
Well, it would make sense for unlimited, right? Tethering, paying the extra cost for tethering.
Yeah, if you have an unlimited
makes
plan.
Makes sense if you have an
true.
Unlimited plan, which was what we had before. For now, it doesn't make sense because you're paying for it to switch it on, but you're not getting any extra service.
See, I think this is something that AT&T is taking a hit for Apple on. I think next week Apple's going to announce wireless mobile hotspot in iPhone OS 4, and there'll be no charge associated with that, or you'll pay $10 once or something like that.
We'll find out. That is next week, WWDC.
Here's the thing is if you want to be able to use your iPhone's data plan on mobile, on your other mobile devices, the easiest way to do that right now is to go out, jailbreak your iPhone, and install either WiMi, I can't remember what it's called. Basically, there's two apps I listed in the story that I posted earlier today. And basically what it does is the same thing as the mobile hotspot feature in the pre or on the Droid Incredible, and it makes your phone into a mobile hotspot for 4 or 5 devices. So that is the AT&T new pricing scheme. I mean, my overall feeling, aside from the goofiness with the tethering and the weird overages for the 200 megabyte plan, are that metered is really good for everybody who's not a bandwidth hog. I mean, I as somebody who uses the network lightly, it seems, I didn't realize that before, but now that I'm paying attention, I do. I'm totally happy not having people congesting my network with a bunch of shit that you know, probably they shouldn't be doing over 3G anyway.
Your argument makes sense only if you think people are going to watch their bandwidth usage.
I think they will after
now.
The first month.
Okay. So it really doesn't affect you. It just affects the hogs.
Fuck everybody else. Fuck okay. The hogs, man. So, and the thing is, the difference is with a cellular network, it's a shared bandwidth thing, right? All the bandwidth on one cell is shared. It's like cable modem or whatever. It's why Comcast.
Remember those old cable modem commercials, the neighbors killing each other?
You mean the DSL commercials?
DSL commercials, yes. Against cable modem.
Yes.
And the neighbors like stalking each other.
Yes.
We're
cutting
basically
their
like
cables
that right
and
now.
All that. I mean, but that's the way cellular networks are. And I mean, they should be priced differently than a more dedicated connection, like a wired landline connection. So anyway, that's it for the AT&T new charges. Basically, they're good for people who don't hog a lot of bandwidth. Rocket ships. Can we talk about rocket ships real quick?
SpaceX news. Okay, go.
SpaceX is Elon Musk, the PayPal guys, and also the Tesla motor dude.
He was in Iron Man 2.
Really?
There's a guest appearance. He also loaned his facility for Iron Man 2.
Interesting. I still haven't seen Iron Man 2. I'm out of the loop. But anyway, his rocket ship company, SpaceX, is doing a test firing in the U.S. in Florida this week. So Friday morning, they're scheduled to launch at, I think, like 11 a.m. Their Pegasus 12, or, you know, has a spacey rocket.
I want Tesla to succeed. I want Tesla to do well so they can at least have a second generation Model S sedan. And then that was the one I will look at.
Interesting.
Not the first generation. If there's anything that
don't ever buy first gen cars.
Don't buy first gen cars. You can buy first gen laptops and tablets and be an early adopter.
Although, you know, you bought a Tucker in 1952, you probably made out pretty well on that deal. Because there's only like 30 of those.
Okay.
Have you never seen Tucker, A Man in His Dream, featuring Jeff Bridges in his finest role outside of The Lebowski?
No.
It's on Netflix Instant Queue. You should check it out. Other news, WWDC this week, next week.
Sorry, next week. We'll be in coverage of it.
While it runs.
Give you the highlight. Yeah. We'll give you the highlights. Tomorrow, or I guess today, depending on when you're listening, the HTC Evo 4G launches officially.
Interesting.
You can buy it in Radio Shack stores, you know, wherever you can buy a Sprint phone.
Hmm.
And on live, last bit of news, on live announced, I don't know, this is probably not a good sign, that early adopters, if you sign up right now, full year subscription free.
Yes, that says to me that they realize that the subscription model plus the paying for games model probably is not the best
idea.
Give
us a monthly subscription for us to give you, for us to have the option to buy games from us that are tied to our service that you never get a physical copy of. And
you can't use when you stop subscribing to the service.
That's right.
Yeah, that seems bad. So we're going to skip questions this week for Norman Chan. I'm Will Smith. As always, if you liked us, write reviews, post comments, come to the site, yell and scream, send us Twitter messages, whatever you want to do. We're around. If you want to check out our live stream, which you should, it's always entertaining and usually starts about 15 minutes late. You can do that by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/testedcom. Or follow me, Will Smith, or N Chan on Twitter, and we'll announce it there as well. Usually it's Wednesday at 3 o'clock. So we were a day late and a dollar short this week. For Norman Chan, I'm Will Smith. Thanks for listening, and we will see you guys next week. You can still win if you're not a dad.